In our last show, we discussed at length issues about patents and programming languages with specific regard to the C# and Mono discussion and debate that's been happening in the community. Obviously, this is an ongoing issue that's changing on a regular basis. We ended up not doing a show this time about that issue since we'd already done one. However, I wanted to mention that I was a guest on Linux Outlaws episode 102, where I discussed at length various things that happened after our last episode of 1.1 that discussed the issue in detail. So if you're interested in hearing more about the C# Mono patented technology issues, please check out my interview on the Linux Outlaws show. Otherwise, just sit back and enjoy episode 1.2 of the Software Freedom Law Show.
This is episode 1.2 of the Software Freedom Law Show. It's weird to be recording when we're actually on the road.
No, but we're not.
But we are.
We will be.
We are.
I'm lost with this time thing again.
Right, okay. Now.
So we are right now, but not right now. But when you are hearing this, we will be at OSCON.
When this is released, I will be in the air.
I'll be at OSCON already.
OSCON.
So what we thought we would do is give everyone a preview of our talks, because we know that OSCON is expensive and hard to get to and a dozen other things. But we wanted to at least give folks a preview of what we're going to be talking about at OSCON, so you can sort of get a general gist. Now, it turns out we're both moderating panels.
So yeah, it worked out that way. We didn't talk about what we were going to be proposing. Sometimes we do when we're both hoping to speak at a conference. But this time, we didn't. We just both came up with ideas independently, and they both happened to be panels.
Well, I actually proposed, like, four talks. Actually, not like four talks. I did propose, actually, four talks.
Did you propose four talks?
I did, but all but one got rejected.
Well, but, you know, you can't really expect to be scheduled for more than one talk.
It's true, but...
Well, it's nice to give them options.
It's true. It's nice to give them options.
So is it weird to ask you what all four of them were? Do you remember what they were?
Yeah, I do. One of them, I know why they rejected, because it's a project that I started in my spare time. And actually, the talk getting rejected made me not work on it anymore. So I'm not even going to mention what the project was, because I never got it going. People will maybe figure it out by Googling around. But that one...
But it won't be in the show notes. Yeah,
it won't be in the show notes, because I'm not going to say. But it was, because I'm not working on the project, and I think it's a neat idea for a project, but I don't want to hype it because I don't have time to work on it right now.
Right.
And the wind was taken out of my sails when my talk was rejected. See, if my talk got accepted, I would have spent all my spare time working on it, because I would have had to
get
a talk.
Well, I hope that wouldn't mean that the wind would have gone out of your sails for the other topics.
No, because the other topics were all stuff that we regularly work on.
No, I know, but that's why I was kidding.
We talked about GPL compliance.
So that was the second one.
It was the second one, and the third one...
And that was that a joint talk?
Yeah, Aaron Williamson, who we heard on a special episode a few episodes back, was and I were going to present on just GPL, the way we've done GPL compliance work.
And Bradley and Aaron are two of the most authoritative people in enforcement right now. You're doing a large portion of the enforcement work that's being done right now.
Yeah, and you're getting involved in a little
bit. I am. I was saying when I said part of, I also want to acknowledge that there is enforcement work being done outside of SFLC.
Oh, that's true. Definitely true.
I mean, you and Aaron are the gatekeepers of most of our enforcement.
That's true.
Which, for our listeners, I know we've said it before, but it's not always a lawsuit when we say enforcement. It's usually not. It's usually discussions, quiet discussions to help companies get into compliance.
Yeah, I've done many, many GPL enforcement cases over my days that have never gone to lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I would say it's probably less than 1%.
Which is a little sad, actually, because I think that means people don't get to hear the happy stories. Because companies that come into compliance shouldn't be shamed publicly.
Yeah.
They should be able to quietly come into compliance, and and a lot of times it's honest mistakes.
Yeah, but that's a topic that I won't be talking about at OSCON, because they didn't accept
the talk.
We'll
not be talking about it at OSCON.
But I was going to.
Ooh, this
is
like a built-in teaser.
It didn't happen. And my last submission, I'll probably remember at some point during our recording of the show, but I don't remember actually right now. I really don't remember what the fourth one was.
Okay.
It was about something that I'm working on.
I'm sure it was. about something.
It was a topic.
I'm sure it also was a very interesting topic. But I'm actually most interested. The sad thing is I can't remember. Excited for your panel, actually.
My panel?
For the panel
what about
that you
your
already said. I'm excited for my panel, but I'm more excited for your panel because I get to just listen and learn at your panel. And at my panel, I have to moderate.
That's true.
So, do you want to talk about the panel that you're actually going, that was accepted and that you're actually going to be?
Yes, so I proposed a panel. And the main reason I proposed this as a panel is that it's been such a topic of discussion at OSCON the last few years. You know, OSCON is primarily the thing of a guy named Tim O'Reilly. Tim and I, if people search the net around, they'll see Tim and I have had our arguments over the years. But he actually really latched early onto an issue that is really important to me, and I was really glad to see him do that. And it was neat because I've spent a lot of time debating, I think very good debate with Tim over the years. But on this issue, it turned out just independently, both he and I and a lot of other people came to the same conclusion all at once with regard to the issue of network services.
Right, and so not only did O'Reilly accept your proposal for the panel, but Tim O'Reilly is going to be a participant, right? Or am I getting that wrong?
Yes, he is indeed going to be on the panel. He agreed, which is, of course, the sneaky way to get a panel accepted. If the guy who's in control of the conference is on your panel, it's really hard for your panel to get rejected, unless he decides he doesn't want to do it. Of course, this is an issue he is concerned about, as many of us are. So, of course, he wanted to do it and was excited to do it.
So that's one perspective, right? And that's and you and he, you said, are largely in agreement.
Yeah, you're setting me up to have to admit that pretty much everybody on the panel is in agreement about this issue being.
But
a
that's
concern.
That's okay. I mean, you're not that doesn't mean there aren't very interesting things to talk about,
right?
Just because there's one overarching point of view.
Right, and I think the reason there's one overarching point of view is because everything is changing technologically with regard to the issue of network services. We're at this point where, as I like to say, that the GPL has become the new BSD license, and AGPL is really the new GPL, because we're at this time where most software people are deploying is a network service now. It's available over the net through some sort of API that's accessed via REST or some other protocol of that nature, and you don't actually get distribution of the software. And a number of problematic side effects have come from this, and if folks listen, I guess about 7 or 8 episodes back, I did a whole talk on this.
Yeah, but I was just about to recommend going back and listening to that talk if you haven't already. I really enjoyed it.
But those who don't want to chase that, I can summarize it briefly.
It'll be
enough,
linked in our show notes.
Of course. But I can summarize briefly enough about what the idea is. It's simply that we have now a new way of computing that is not about doing your own computing work on your own computer.
Mm-hmm.
The things you care about with regard to computing are often in the cloud.
I was about to say, reference the cloud and say that I feel like the cloud draws a cloud over the issue.
and it's like any other buzzword. It's heavily hyped and it doesn't change all that much. It's still roughly client-server computing. It's still a lot of things we've known for many, many years. I think what changes is that everybody wants to show up in one place. The crowd technology is really what's changed things, and we see this with how technology has changed the, you know, what's, of course, many things may have happened. I'm going to make reference to a news event that may have changed since we said this, but the issues that for you were a few weeks ago with the Iranian election, where technologies, these social networking technologies, were being used to get information out to the public.
Right.
And that's a new type of computing. Now, the benefits of it are clear. I think that what happened in the Iranian election what showed how beneficial these various technologies are, but it also showed another thing about these technologies, which is that it's really important to have them distributed,
right,
and federated, because the Iranian government was trying to shut down people from being able to get to certain types of sites, but they were still able to get to others. And it shows why you don't want a central point of failure, where everybody has to go to a single site, you know, some MyTwitface, which is the only place you can go. And
I haven't heard that, actually.
It's actually Conan O'Brien. It's not mine. Conan O'Brien did a...
I need to watch more TV.
Yeah. So we'll go meta for a moment and say Conan O'Brien did a skit whereby... how he used to do In the Year 2000? Do you know that part?
Yeah.
Okay, so now in his new show, it's In the Year 3000.
Okay.
And in the year 3000, the three major social networking websites merged to form one giant social networking website, YouTwitface. So now I call them all YouTwitface because it just fits.
It's hilarious.
So, but when it's centralized in this way, when right. there's only one place to go, there is only one Facebook and one Twitter and one YouTube. Well, these means that there isn't. It's very easy for someone to shut people out. The great firewall of China can block them very well. You can have people unable to get access to the site for whatever reason, either because of governmental reasons in those cases, or because of technological reasons, that the site gets overloaded and so forth. And you can't take your data and put it on your own server very easily. Mm-hmm. And even if you can get your data out and put it on your own server, it might be the case that you can't be part of the community anymore when you have your data off on your own server. Mm-hmm. So we have to develop federated technologies that are designed to have many, many servers and the ability to add more servers under control of different people and have them all be part of the same social network or the same application.
And is there any speaker on your panel that sort of is experienced in that world?
Oh, you're so nice to do this. You know, and I'm going to say this on the panel when we have it, that my hero on the panel really is Evan of Identica, because he has actually made this happen in the microblogging space. He has a free software implementation of a Twitter-like service that is completely free software under the AGPL and is federated, which means you can run your own server and connect up to other servers in the network, and it looks to the users like they're seeing one social network, even though there's many, many mm-hmm. servers run by different corporate entities, different individuals all together. Now, the federation is not working perfectly yet. I mean, software is always under development. But he's taken that as a serious goal of his application and is really working towards it. And he's basically saving the microblogging part of that. But that's only one of the triad of the YouTwitface. So we have other things we have to replace. And we have to start building this kind of software. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually not that hard of a problem. I think where we're going to have disagreement on this panel is that a lot of the people on the panel... I probably disagree with some of them that we have to spend more time thinking and writing and deciding what the right solutions are. I think that we should take a page out of the playbook, and actually Evan and I think are in an agreement on this, of the free software movement. Mm-hmm. Where Richard Stallman, when he started GNU, said, I don't know if I can write a whole operating system myself, but it's clear we need a free software operating system, so I'm going to try to write one and right. see if it works. And of course, there have been abysmal failures in that. GNU Herd comes to mind.
Yeah, but there have been great successes, too.
And the fact that RMS tried to write things, succeeded at lots of them, succeeded at mm-hmm. GCC, succeeded at Emacs, failed at GNU Herd, but succeeded enough such that it made a thing like Linux possible, which got us the kernel for right. the whole system. So I think that... I think we should think about this in the federated network space, and we've just got to start trying to build things. And a lot of people are talking about Google Wave and how this is going to be a new way to do the YouTwit faces of the world, because you'll have all these different messages going back and forth, and it's a framework for all these types of applications. But we'll have to see if the licenses of Wave are good, if the protocol can really withstand federation. I've read through the protocol documents. It seems to me that federation was thought of and was considered, but a lot of times when you have a protocol document and then try mm-hmm. to implement the technology, it doesn't necessarily pan out. And I think we as a community, I don't have any problem adopting Google Wave. They've put it under the Apache license, which means there's a patent promise in there and other things. And so I feel confident that we can adopt that protocol. But we have to keep Google in check on that and make sure that, hey, you guys promised you wanted this federated, you didn't want it to be all Google controlled. Let's build, as a community, with Google in the community, of course, a mm-hmm. new application space that is federated. I think it's great that they've taken the first step, but we have to be watchdogs, and we have to push back a little bit and say, we want to implement some of it in our community, we want it to be shared among the community, and we want federated community control of the place you go to, whatever right. that is.
So who else is on the panel?
So we also have Mako Hill, who's at MIT, and he's done a lot of writing and thinking in this area.
Right, and he's also with the FSF.
Yes, he's on the board of directors of the FSF. I'm reading the affiliation he put on for the panel, so I figured Mako had a reason for picking that affiliation. He's a guy, like many of us, who wears many hats. So we have Nathan Yergler of Creative Commons, who I believe is the new CTO of Creative Commons. And he's going to be on the panel to talk about the sort of where they fit in, because it's really important that the content be licensed freely as well, because a lot of what you get on the site is not just the software, but it's also the data and the content, and making sure that the content licensing is such that it allows people to operate freely in the environment, at the same time making sure that people don't get misrepresented or misquoted and those sorts of things. So there's a lot of challenges.
It's really cross-media and cross-areas.
Right, which is exactly why we need folks from Creative Commons involved, because it's the licensing of the software is a component. It's an important component, but it's only one of lots of components in how to build the cloud of the future, or whatever it is we're going to build, and it has to be a place we want to be.
So I think, like my panel, this panel came was a product of discussions and discussion groups that you were having, isn't it? It sort of was inspired by
Autonomous, which is a discussion group about these issues related to that. And, of course, Tim O'Reilly's essays that he wrote about it and put out there. But I see you're trying to transition to your panel, which I think is a good idea.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's like you think about your own topics that other people's topics are way more interesting.
Well, but your topic is interesting to me, because this has been, it's funny, we were talking in the last episode about how, you know, Java came to be and how aggressive trademarks were in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting issue to me, because we were so afraid. I'm going to tell, here's a transition story for you about your panel. When Java first was really big, a couple of folks wanted to start a free software implementation of Java. And my claim to fame in that community, I never wrote a line of code, I have to admit. I've never helped in the way I should have the free software Java implementations. But the one thing I did was talk to them a lot about what they were going to name it. And the problem was that Sun was so aggressive in their trademark enforcement that if you made a little program on your website and called it Java Foo, and people were doing this because they were excited about the Java language.
Right.
Why they were excited about Java,
right,
I don't know. But they were. And it's good to see people excited, generally speaking, about a new technology. And they were calling their program, I wrote the Java Foobar program that implements Foobar in Java. And Sun would come after them and enforce the trademark against them. And so when we were naming what eventually became, well, I won't say the name until I tell the story, the free software Java implementation, we said, well, what name can we give it, since we can't put in the word Java, because we know they'll come after us with their trademarks if we do. So I suggested we call it $ClassPath, all caps. And the reason I came up with that idea was that if you set your class path on a Unix system, you set it to where the Java libraries are, and they were usually installed in user lib Java. Well, in Bourne shell, if you put a dollar sign in front of something, that expands the variable. So I thought, if you call it $ClassPath, you're actually calling it user lib Java.
Hmm.
But of course, you're not saying user lib Java.
That's really funny.
So, but the thing was, is that RMS hated two things about it. One, he hated the name being in all caps. And
right.
Two, he hated having the dollar sign.
But
in
you,
front of it.
I didn't know that you came up with the name
of ClassPath. Sure did.
I'm impressed.
I'm not impressed, because the reason I came up with the name is because I was on the early mailing list and I was actually going to help with the coding. And then I got busy with my master's degree and stuff, and I never helped. So I feel kind of bad, in a way, because I never actually did any real work.
The one time I sort of participated in trying to help come up with a new name based on a trademark dispute was Game, in their transition to what is now Pigeon. And I came up with all these, now in retrospect, pretty terrible names.
Actually, I think your name, one of your names was
better.
Yeah, but I don't want to say it.
Okay. Well, you know, and it
was... Of course, the developers have to decide what they want to do.
And I actually think that Pigeon is a way better name. I love the name Pigeon for an instant messaging, because it's Pigeon, P-I-D-G-I-N. You probably all know that by now. But it's great because, you know, it's the Pigeon speak, but which is what you do when you instant message. And
So these are two examples where free software, this Java thing and the AIM thing, the game thing, which became which was based on AIM, which is where the trademark dispute was. These are two cases where trademark laws just come into direct collision course with a free software situation, free software project.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and in the game situation, I think they wound up not only with a better name, but they also established a good trademark policy, which now allows others to use their trademarks reasonably. So, I mean, I think that that's sort of one of the things that I want to focus on with trademark law and also on the panel. So were you going to...
Right, I was just going to say, your panel is all about this stuff. It's about
it's about trademarks. And I wanted to keep it very more practically oriented. I hesitate to say business oriented, but more usefully oriented than a legal discussion. So I tried to limit the lawyers on the panel to just me. and that's because I want to, for the legal discussion, I want to only talk factually about what trademark law covers, but not about the intricacies of trademark law on the edge cases. I want to talk about, why are trademarks so important? Why do companies enforce them so aggressively? What can you accomplish through a trademark policy? And of course, we recommend very broad trademark policies. Trademark law basically covers, it basically tries to prevent confusion in the marketplace. So the purpose of trademarks is that customers, if they buy your products, won't be confused. That's how trademark law came about. So in other words, you know, I'm trying to think of that, you know, try to channel our legal director, Dan Ravisher, because he comes up with these, like, he can come up with an analogy on the drop of a hat, and it takes me a little
longer.
You
know that most of his analogies are not very good, right? it's a 1 in 20 thing with Dan's analogies.
Sometimes they're dead on, and then sometimes, because he makes so many of them, there are some that come out, you know, that
I
are
guess
a little
bit strange. It's volume that we're looking at.
Yeah. Well, I won't come up with an example. I'll just say that... that it's so that when you're using software from, I won't even say software, when you're buying a product from a source that you understand where that has come from, and that there's not somebody else trying to pretend that they're you and confusing the marketplace into thinking that something that that other person is selling has come from you. So it's really this very, very basic idea of marketing and consumer confusion, and I think it gets inflated to be much more meaningful than it is, and people think that there's a lot more control in trademarks than there are. So one of the ways that we counter that in the free software world is to write policies that permit a very broad usage while protecting the mark for very specific things, which is to say that the free software project has been developed by the project, whoever they are, whether it's a nonprofit or a group of people, that distribution is from them, and to sort of set the ground rules for a situation where if somebody does want to fork that code, they know how to do it without infringing on the trademark. And it's not an obstacle. You know, and each project comes up with a different idea of what they want for their marks. Most of our projects, for example, are happy with anyone making t-shirts that advertise for their project because they want everybody to use their project. And there's no confusion about whether or not, you know, the t-shirts are referring to you know, their project or somebody else's project. So it's not a problem. It all works together and it all promotes.
So that's talking about what free software folks should do with regard to their own trademarks. Of course, the old problem still exists. I sort of think that is a new problem, which is it's only been in the past maybe 5 years that free software projects have even thought about the idea of getting trademarks from some, maybe go 8 years, but it's certainly been in the 2000s that's happened. But you go back to the 1990s and like the Java situation I was talking about, I think it's really interesting. You've got Simon Phipps on your panel who's from Sun and a very loud community advocate in Sun. He's very pro free software in a lot of his positions. I don't agree with him about everything, but in a lot of his positions he's very pro free software. And so I'm curious, you know, how are you guys going to cover this issue of what companies want to do, and when companies get too aggressive, and actually, as in the case of AIM, they aggressively enforce against a free software project.
Well, that's exactly what I want to talk about, and I actually have Larry Augustine on the panel as well, because I think it's so interesting to hear about how, from a venture capital perspective, all this plays out too. So, you know, when folks are thinking of investing in different companies, how does trademark control work out there? And the panel actually came out of, because I would be remiss if I didn't mention Jerv also, came out of this great discussion we had last year at the Floss Foundation's meeting between Simon and Jerv. And Jerv was talking about...
I should say, Jerv's from the Mozilla Foundation.
From the Mozilla Foundation, Jerv Markham. And Jerv was talking about technological solutions to work into the code so that you can change the trademarks easily, so that trademarks aren't an obstacle to development.
Yeah, his idea was that you should have make untrademark command mm-hmm. on the source code base so that it would remove all the trademarks, because this was right around the time when there was a big argument between, it was actually mostly resolved at that point, but there was this big argument between the Debian community and Mozilla, and which eventually led to the creation of IceWeasel, which is this mm-hmm. unbranded Firefox in Debian. And Jerv actually really argued pretty strongly that he felt they should have the right to do that, and that the mm-hmm. Mozilla didn't want their trademarks screwed up, but they also didn't want to prevent Debian from rebranding either.
Right, and it is quite a big obstacle. It takes a lot of work if you want to fork a code base. It takes mm-hmm. a lot of work to strip out the trademarks.
Yeah, and as another example, I throw in my free software history here. There was actually a lot of arguments. This is pre-Fedora now, with Red Hat Linux, because it was very difficult to unbrand Red Hat, and one of the things that would happen was somebody would redistribute Red Hat and then get into a trademark dispute with Red Hat.
Right. I mean, I think that was sort of like the basis behind CentOS was to do that. So interesting stuff. We hope that you come to our panels, and if you're at OSCON, and stop by our booth too. We've actually got some swag this year. Not a lot.
Yeah, I spent a lot of times in conference booths. I'm afraid of them now, you know.
I'm a little afraid because I sometimes feel like I have a sign on my head that says the lawyer is in.
Yeah, I know. You've mentioned that before. I just don't like it because I spent so many years, I was pretty much the only person from the Free Software Foundation going to conferences. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people in the community know me as the guy in the booth. Once somebody walked up to me and said, every organization has a slave. It looks like you're FSF slave.
That's
because
funny.
I was in the booth all the time.
Is Deb the slave? But she doesn't... She's in the booth all the time, but I think she enjoys it.
Yeah, I think Deb of the Free Software Foundation, she actually, one of the things that actually came out of me doing all these conferences was they built into a job description that you were supposed to be in the booth. My booth
and
time
she does
was,
more than that.
Right,
too.
But it is officially in her job description.
Right, and it wasn't in yours. It's not now, so we're grateful when Bradley spends time with us. And it's in none of our job descriptions, of course. Aaron Williamson and I will probably be spending most of the time at the booth to the extent that there's someone at the booth, and we're both, you know, lawyers here. We're none of us are obligated to be at the booth, but we like to be there so that we can tell you what we do. And
I like you to hear about what SFLC does, but I don't like to be in the booth telling you, because I don't like to be in the booth.
That said, if you bring an interesting conversation to us, Bradley tends to get sucked in.
Yeah, no, the problem is that I feel guilty. It's all guilt.
I just think it's important to be there.
I'm for the booth. I've told you this. I'm for the booth. I just don't want to stand in it all day. I've done it so much. I've done my duty to free software and country.
And you will be there less than we are.
Okay.
Most
Thank
likely.
You.
But if you want to stop by, we'll have some stickers and
you
other
can play
little
where at the conference is Bradley Kuhn at the booth. You can play a little game where people have to guess if I'm showing up at the booth. And give away prizes if I show up. But I can't see the thing because it won't be a proper game.
Oh, man. That is the worst idea I've heard in a while.
Pretty bad idea. That's true. You know, I was thinking because Stephen Colbert did When in the World and When in Time. Is Stephen Colbert going to He went to Iraq.
I saw one of those. That was great.
Yeah.
Anyway, so maybe we'll see you at OSCON.
But probably not in the booth, at least as far as I'm concerned.
We may have a BOF.
We will
check the schedule.
BOFs are good.
We'll probably have a BOF.
But if you don't come to OSCON, don't worry about it. We told you everything we're going to talk about. So at OSCON, so you heard.
So
it.
You're covered.
Yeah, you don't have to. Don't come if you weren't already going. But if you're already going, come by and see us.
Thanks for joining us. The Software Freedom Law Show is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This show is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. You totally called this episode 12.
But I only did it by accident.
Busted.